Thanks, guys. Tim, alcoholic. Amen. All right, chapter 11, page 151. A vision for you. For most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. It is joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good. But not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The old pleasures were gone. They were but memories. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. And the reasons we were failing was we were trying to use self-will to solve a problem that was beyond human aid. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself, as we became subjects of King Alcohol, capital K, capital A, meaning praying at that altar, choosing that as our higher power. We were shivering denizens, which are residents, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding companionship and approval. Momentarily we did. Then would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen: terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. Now and then, a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, "I don't miss it at all. Feel better, work better, having a better time." As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half dozen drinks and get away with it. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. What's the jumping off place? The bottom. There's the gift of desperation. He will wish for the end. So we can read that a couple of ways. He will wish for the end of this pain, or he'll just wish for the end of his life. Right? Because our disease is ultimately fatal. It's ultimately fatal. Jails, institutions, or death. There's no choice D, right? We have shown how we got out from under. You say, "Yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute?" Yes, there is a substitute. And it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. So what is he distinguishing between? Having gone through the steps in the beginning of the book, you've had a spiritual experience, but that may not be enough. You may now be ruminating on the fact that your life is just not going to be that exciting. Helping other people the rest of my life, I don't know. It doesn't sound so good to me. I used to go to the club. Well, it's saying there is a substitute that is vastly more than that, and it is the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's where we now get to have some of the experiences that drew us to liquor to begin with. You know, at the bar, in my basement with the five guys, you know, or whatever, right? There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. the most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus, we find the fellowship, and so will you. So here we're differentiating between the 12 steps and the fellowship. You could do the 12 steps and not hang out in the fellowship. Probably a mistake, right? I've seen that one. How is that to come about, you ask? Where am I to find these people? You are going to meet these new friends in your own community, near you. Alcoholics are dying helplessly like people in a sinking ship. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds, high and low, rich and poor. These are future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. Sounds like 12-step to me. That sounds like it right in a nutshell. So if somebody says, you know, so how does that whole AA thing work? AAA. How does AA work? Well, it works by clearing away, becoming willing, you know, honest, open, willing, becoming willing, doing the work, 4 through 9, living in the solution, 10, 11, and 12, and rinse and repeat on 12 until further notice. Right? You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. It may seem incredible that these men are to become happy, respected, and useful once more. How can they rise out of such misery, bad repute, and hopelessness? The practical answer is that since these things have happened among us, they can happen with you. Should you wish them above all else, in other words, number one, and be willing to make use of our experience, we are sure they will come. The age of miracles is still with us. Our own recovery proves that. Our hope is that when this chip of a book is launched on the world tide of alcoholism, defeated drinkers, meaning alcoholics, defeated drinkers will seize upon it to follow its suggestions. Many, we are sure, will rise to their feet and march on. They will approach still other sick ones, and fellowships of Alcoholics Anonymous may spring up in each city and hamlet, havens for those who must find a way out. In the chapter, Working with Others, which is all about step 12, right? In the chapter, Working with Others, you gathered an idea of how we approach and aid others to health. Suppose now that through you, several families have adopted this way of life. You will want to know more of how to proceed from that point. Perhaps the best way of treating you to a glimpse of your future will be to describe the growth of the fellowship among us. Here is a brief account. So what was the point there? Once a few people around you have gotten the solution and are getting some traction, that would then create a group. The group is the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. So it is your responsibility to make an environment in which we are, you know, happy, joyous, and free, and not a glum lot, right? So that they're not looking at, like, look at this miserable SOB, I may as well drink. That's falling short on your 12-step work. Beyond the person having their own spiritual experience, what are you now doing to incorporate a healthy lifestyle in the group around you? Years ago, in 1935, one of our number, Bill Wilson, made a journey to a certain western city, Akron, Ohio. From a business standpoint, his trip came off badly. Had he been successful in his enterprise, he would have been set on his feet financially, which at the time seemed vitally important. But his venture wound up in a lawsuit and bogged down completely. The proceeding was shot through with much hard feeling and controversy. Sounds like resentment, right? Bitterly discouraged, he found himself in a strange place. So, obviously, Akron, Ohio, in the Mayflower Hotel specifically. Discredited and almost broke. Still physically weak, and sober but a few months, and we'll see later on that it's 6 months, he saw that his predicament was dangerous. He wanted so much to talk with someone, but whom? One dismal afternoon, he paced a hotel lobby, wondering how his bill would be paid. At one end of the room stood a glass-covered directory of local churches. Down the lobby, a door opened into an attractive bar. He could see the gay crowd inside. In there, he would find companionship and release. Unless he took some drinks, he might not have the courage to scrape an acquaintance and would have to have a lonely weekend. Of course he couldn't drink, but why not sit hopefully at a table, a bottle of ginger ale before him? After all, had he not been sober 6 months now? Perhaps he could handle, say, 3 drinks, no more. Fear gripped him. He was on thin ice. Again, it was the old insidious insanity. What's that? Mental obsession is the first part of the Dr. Silkworth's description of the disease. So even though you don't put booze in your mouth, even though you don't do it, and the phenomenon of craving doesn't kick in, and it's kind of a moot point as long as you don't drink, right? The problem is your mind is going to send you back to it anyway. So you're screwed either way. Unless you find defense against the first drink. Right? And it can't be self-will. With a shiver, he turned away and walked down the lobby to the church directory. In other words, he made the decision. Right? Now he puts it into action. He's walking towards the church directory. Music and gay chatter still floated to him from the bar. But what about his responsibilities, his family, and the men who would die because they would not know how to get well? Ah, yes, those other alcoholics. There must be many such in this town. He would phone a clergyman. His sanity returned, and he thanked God. Selecting a church at random from the directory, he stepped into a booth and lifted the receiver. He called to his call to the clergyman led him presently to a certain resident of the town who, though formally able and respected, was then nearing the nadir of alcoholic despair. It was the usual situation: home in jeopardy, wife ill, children distracted, bills in arrears, and standing damage. He had a desperate desire to stop, but saw no way out, for he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. Painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, the man did not fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. Note, bottom of the page. This refers to Bill's first visit with Dr. Bob. These men later became co-founders of AA. Bill's story opens the text of this book. Dr. Bob's heads the story. When our friend related his experience, the man agreed that no amount of willpower he might muster could stop his drinking for long. So we're going to learn later on that lots of idiots can stop drinking. Lots of them. Staying stopped is the hard part, right? I underlined this twice. A spiritual experience, he conceded, was absolutely necessary, but the price seemed high upon the basis suggested. He told how he lived in constant worry about those who might find out about his alcoholism. The doctor was concerned that his reputation would be ruined, right? And then have no business. His business was already in a shambles. He had, of course, the familiar alcoholic obsession that few knew of his drinking. And obviously what's it saying there is everybody knew he was a drunk, right? Why, he argued, should he lose the remainder of his business, only to bring still more suffering to his family by foolishly admitting his plight to people from whom he made his livelihood? He would do anything, he said, but that. Being intrigued. So what can we glean from that last statement? He's not going to be successful. Right? We know what he said. I will do anything but that. Complete honesty. I will do anything but that. Let's see what that gets him. Being intrigued, however, he invited our friend to his home. Sometime later, and just as he thought he was getting control of his liquor situation, he went on a roaring bender. That's the American Medical Association trip he does. So he's done this for 20 years. He's got a couple of weeks sobriety. I forget exactly now. He says to Anne, he says, don't worry. I got this thing now. I'm going to go down. I'm taking the train down to Atlantic City. I'm going to the convention, which I've always done. All will be good. Don't worry. On the train going down there, he's drinking. Like, that's how fast, right? Because he really, he doesn't have all the ingredients in place yet. He's not truly honest yet, right? For him, this was the spree that ended all spree. Sometimes we call this the convincer, right? He saw that he would have to face his problem squarely, that God might give him mastery. So he did not face everything squarely. He held back that little bit in that sentence that I highlighted to you, right? Can't hold back. All in. Half measures get you squat. Right, it says in the book, Neil, but I like my word. Squat. Right? One morning, he took the bull by the horns and set out to those he feared what his trouble had been. So the backstory on there is, he comes back, he takes the train back from Atlantic City, he's whacked out of his gourd, pulls into the train station, too drunk to call Ann and Bill, let's get over this thing first before anybody sees me. He calls his receptionist, and she and her husband Everett come and get him, bring him to the house, sleeps it off overnight, wakes up in the morning, the receptionist calls Ann and says, listen, we got your boy here, blah, blah, blah. Bill goes, gets him, and brings him home. He's a wreck, absolute wreck. And they're detoxing him for a couple of days. I forget the number of days now. But Bill and Bob are sleeping in the same bedroom, little twin beds, right? And, 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, Dr. Bob turns and says to Bill, I'm going to go through with this thing. And Bill says, oh, you mean the surgery you got to do in the morning? And he says, no, this thing that we've been talking about, I'm going to do it. I'm committed now. Bill says, all right, awesome, awesome. Now, he gets up. He's got to do a repair surgery, a surgery that he's a colorectal surgeon, right? He's got to fix a surgery that morning. His hands are shaking. He's in bad shape. Bill gives him a beer and a down, a sedative, a goofball, before going in the hospital. He goes in and he nails the surgery. Got it. Like, he's on. Got it. Guy's good. They're waiting for him at home. Bill and Ann are waiting for him at home. And he doesn't come home. They go, oh boy. Here we go again. 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour. Midnight, he comes strolling in. He was out telling the honesty part that he had not gotten yet. He was out making amends. He was doing his ninth step. He did a surrender that morning. Bill and him had been together long enough that he had acquainted him with all of his shenanigans, right? It's implied, right? He's already down here. Same day. Same day. Never drinks again from here. Right? What does it say? Halfway through ninth step, you get all the promises? That's what it says, 83, 84. Freaking guy came home with the first day. Here. Right? So, I don't know where I was going with that, but now where the hell am I? One morning, took the bull at midnight. Yeah, is that it? Right there. At midnight, he came home exhausted, but very happy. He has not had a drink since. As we shall see, he now means a great deal to his community, and the major liabilities of 30 years of hard drinking have been repaired in 4. So he got sober in 35. Book is written in 39. There's your math. But life was not easy for the two friends. Plenty of difficulties presented themselves. Both saw that they must keep spiritually active. So in my world, that would be 10, 11, and 12. One day they called up. Now, this is just a couple of days. I think Bob now is sober 2 weeks. One day they called up the head nurse at a local hospital, Mrs. Hall, right? And they go, Mrs. Hall, what the hell's going on? They explained their need and inquired if she had a first-class alcoholic prospect. She replied, yes, we've got a corker. He's just beaten up a couple of nurses. Goes off his head completely when he's drinking. But he's a grand chap when he's sober, though he's been in here 8 times in the last 6 months. So it's a detox, right? He's in the detox unit. 8 times in 6 months. I'll bet you he's beyond self-will, right? I'd say he's powerless. Understand, he was once a well-known lawyer in town, but just now we've got him strapped down tight. Note, bottom of the page. This refers to Bill's and Dr. Bob's first visit to AA number 3. See the Pioneer section? This resulted in AA's first group at Akron, Ohio, 1935. So Bill Dotson, D-O-T-S-O-N, that's who we're talking about here. Here was a prospect, all right, but by the description, none too promising. The use of spiritual principles in such cases was not so well understood as it is now. But one of the friends, Dr. Bob, said, put him in a private room, we'll be down. 2 days later, a future fellow of Alcoholics Anonymous stared glassily at the strangers beside his bed. Who are you fellows and why this private room? I was always in a ward before. And he's making points of that because he's saying, I'm not freaking paying for this private crap. I've been here 8 times. It's not working. I'm not paying more than you. Well, I want the discounted rate, right? And anytime you were put in a private room, it meant what? You were going to die. That was the end. Said one of the visitors, we're giving you a treatment for alcoholism. Hopelessness was written large on the man's face as he replied, oh, but that's no use. Nothing would fix me. I'm a goner. The last 3 times I got drunk on the way home from here, I'm afraid to go out the door. I can't understand it. For an hour, the two friends told them about their drinking experiences. So what does that mean? 30 minutes each. Not 4 hours each. Be succinct. Right? Don't make the guy like, oh, I got to get away from these guys, right? Get to the point. Over and over, he would say, that's me, that's me. I drink like that. The man in the bed was told of the acute poisoning from which he suffered, how it deteriorates the body of an alcoholic and warps his mind. Physical, mental. See it? Okay. There was much talk about the mental state preceding the first drink. Wow, why that? Because that's the more important thing. If I don't put the booze in my mouth, and the phenomenon of craving doesn't kick in, it means it's a moot point. The problem is the mental state. And how do we fix the mental state? If we are insane, because in two it says we're going to get fix us to sanity, that means we're insane, right? How are we going to use an insane mind to fix an insane mind? It doesn't work out that way. That's why it's all about we're powerless over something, and the answer is to find the power. Yes, that's me, said the sick man, the very image. You fellows know your stuff all right, but I don't see what good it will do. You fellows are somebody. I was once, but I'm a nobody now. From what you tell me, I know more than ever I can't stop. Correct, because they never told them the solution yet, right? You don't lead, Dr. Silkworth told them that. Don't lead with the solution. Don't lead with the big spiritual upheaval that you had or the awakening over 15 years of all the studying. Don't go there first. Go with the medical aspect first. Get their attention. Give the identification that you know what you're talking about. You're armed with the facts, right? You didn't read it. You lived it, right? At this, both the visitors burst into a laugh. Said the future fellow anonymous, damn little to laugh about that I can see. The two friends spoke of their spiritual experience and told them about the course of action they carried out. So that's held for the end. And in fact, there's some place in here it suggests, see if you can get him to ask. Like, just don't give it to him. Get him, like, salivating. Like, tell me. And it's kind of how the way the book is written, right? It's always, they give you the impression they're going to tell you at the next line, and you got to read more pages. And they're like, it pisses me off. He interrupted. He now knows it's spiritual. He goes, I used to be strong for the church, but that won't fix it. I've prayed to God on hangover mornings and sworn I'd never touch another drop, but by 9 o'clock I'd be boiled as an owl. And that's just an old, 20s, 30s phrase meaning very drunk, right? Next day, found the prospect more receptive. So they only spent the hour, it tells us that. They go home and they say, let's see if that softened them up a bit. Let's go back for the next visit. Next day, they found the prospect more receptive. He had been thinking it over. Maybe you're right, he said. God ought to be able to do anything. Then he added, he sure didn't do much for me when I was trying to fight this booze racket alone. Inviting your higher power into the game with you, right? On the third day, the lawyer gave his life to the care and direction of his creator. Step three, right? And we saw before that, that's actually him taking one and two. He admitted that it was something beyond his power, and he's then accepting the fact that God could do something for him for it, right? So there's him taking step three, and said he was perfectly willing to do anything necessary. His wife came, scarcely daring to be hopeful, though she thought she saw something different about her husband already. He had begun to have a spiritual experience. And we saw that in a couple of our pioneers, that they had the spiritual experience in three, right? We're more apt to have it in 4, 5, or 9, or 12, or taking a sponsee through the step. We're more apt to have it a little bit later. In my opinion, that's the way I see it. That afternoon, so there was 3 days that they dealt with them. Two, they let them sort of get the fog cleared before they even saw them. So we're 5 days out. That afternoon, he put on his clothes and walked from the hospital a free man. He entered a political campaign, making speeches, frequenting men's gathering places of all sorts, often staying up all night. He lost the race by only a narrow margin. But he had found God, and in finding God, had found himself. That was in June 1935. He never drank again. He, too, has become a respected and useful member of his community. He has helped other men recover and is a power in the church from which he was long absent. I'm going to stop there tonight.